It's awesome to welcome back to Sydney and Interstatic on 2SER this evening. George Fitzgerald, fighting jet lag, feeling fresh?
Hi.
How's things?
Yeah, good, minus the jet lag. I'm fine. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here off the back of having a new record out as well. Is it a thrill to play out around the time you unleash an album, or have you been dropping unreleased songs off this record into your sets for ages?
I mean, I've been like, I road tested things for a bit, but it's a massive thrill after you put something out to go and play it when, you know, more people in the crowd know it, and you get a different kind of reaction from people.
People aren't coming up to you afterwards saying, "I couldn't Shazam that song, mate. What is it?"
Yeah, exactly. You know, that happens quite a lot of gigs. People asking you what things are, and you kind of can't really tell them, or you don't want to. And also, like, immediately after you've released something, you feel like, as an artist, it's the bit where people don't come up to you and say, when are you releasing something? It's like the pressure's off. You get like a little bit of a window.
You can say to them, the future is now.
It's like, yeah, I've done my job, and like, I've handed my homework in, and, you know, I'm all sort of paid up, and it's like a nice time to enjoy.
It's an age-old question, but, you know, how much does playing out, or DJing out especially, shape the songs you make for an album? You know, how much do you road test in George?
It used to be more important than it is now. I mean, I especially this last record, I wrote it more with a live show in mind. With the DJ gigs, it kind of straddles the two. I can play some of the tracks out in clubs, and I have kind of extended versions of them that I'll play, but they are meant to kind of straddle those two worlds. So in terms of the arrangements and everything, I'm not really paying attention to that when I road test them. I'm just paying attention to the sonics, really.
Because before you were a jobbing musician, you had an insight into crafting what people wanted to hear, because you were a record store employee, right?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
Black Market Records in London?
Yeah, it was. Oh, a long time ago.
So did it look easier from behind the counter, thinking you could be a musician?
That's a good question. I didn't really think about it like that. No, I just regarded... I was producing at the time when I started working there. I just kind of regarded it as a bit of a sort of apprenticeship in... You know, I just got to sit there all day and listen to all of the records that came into the shop. And it kind of broadened my horizons quite a lot. And, you know, taught me a lot about what works and what people are into. It was a fantastic time. I wouldn't want to do it anymore, but it was. I do look back very fondly at that time.
Did it also fashion your idea of what labels you wanted your own stuff to be released on? Because after you worked in the shop, you took yourself to Berlin. So were you furthering your musical career by going to Berlin, or did your musical career get further because you were in Berlin?
I think I just wanted a change. I mean, with Berlin, I'd lived there before, and I used to work there as a translator, weirdly, in a previous life before I was doing music. So I just kind of wanted to go back there, and Berlin's a very cheap place compared to London, and it was quite a nice place to go when I was still figuring things out for myself musically. But in terms of, you know, if you work in a record shop, you get a better idea of where you fit into this spectrum of music that's, you know, in the electronic world, and also where you want to fit in, what you think you offer and where you want to fit in. So it was this incredibly like formative period.
You certainly, you know, ticked a few crate diggers fantasies probably by getting, you know, the first single released on Hot Flush back in 2010. You know, you were sort of, I guess, front and center when that label was peaking off the back of Scuba and Mount Kimby and artists like that.
Yeah, I mean, looking back on it, it's kind of mad. I sort of came towards the end of this massive hot streak that they were on with things like Mount Kimby and Joy Orbison and Sepultura and stuff like that. And all of the first few gigs that I did were with, I think the first poster of the first gig I ever did was with Mount Kimby and Machine Drum, and just looking back on it, that's actually quite a good lineup.
I hope that poster's hanging in the toilet at home now
or
something.
Yeah.
And after Berlin, of course, you moved back to London in between the last record and this one.
Kind of, yeah, about a quarter of the way through writing this one, I just sort of up sticks and came back to London, moved to South London. Yeah, which I think had quite a big effect on the sound of the records. Like, London's a very different place.
Did it curb your clubbing time as well, becoming a dad?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean,
a lot of life changes happened in that time.
Yeah, I mean, it's... it's kind of no secret that you can't be in the club as much when you're a dad. But I think that change was happening with me a little bit. I was spending way more time in the studio and in other places and record shops than just experiencing music in the club anyway. And I think coming back to London, it's kind of no secret that clubbing in London has sort of lost ground on places like Berlin over the last sort of 10 years. But what I would say about it is that it's still a much more musically broad place than Berlin. So in terms of like broader musical inspiration and just the kind of infrastructure that's there for musicians, it's basically, you know, it's one of the best places in the world. So, coming back to London was really important for this record.
Yeah, it seemed also when you moved into making albums that you probably broadened your spectrum and sound and ideas and all that kind of thing. And the first record, Fading Love, in 2015, really hung off a couple of those big boxed-in collaborations in the form of Full Circle and About Time. How did you break it to him that you wouldn't be calling him up for the next record, George?
I never really thought about it like that.
I mean, Full Circle had 12 million plays on Spotify alone, so...
Well, we did actually work on the track for Tracy Thorn, actually, that's on this record. He had a hand in that as well. So, you know, me and him, he's one of my best friends, and we kind of... We tried a few things out for this record. It didn't necessarily work with him singing on it. And, you know, we wanted to get Tracy involved in singing that.
You don't say no to Tracy Thorn, right? When these collaborations were coming your way for this record, Bonobo, like, that must have been nice, you know, emails to wake up to.
Yeah, it wasn't an awkward conversation with Ollie Boxton saying, hey, I want to get Tracy to sing this one. Or, you know, Tracy's up for it, do you mind? He was okay about that one.
Working with someone like her, I mean, were you hearing her voice in your head when you had a song, or what, did you start from scratch? Or how do guests like that end up on this record? Because there are some real marquee names.
I've just always been a massive Tracy Thorn fan. I'm a child of the 90s. And, you know, I think her kind of... She's got this very British kitchen sink melancholy going on. You know, it always sounds like it's raining when she's singing, which I massively dig. And, you know, there's something in that in my music. Definitely.
Yeah, the boxed-in songs had a bit of that as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You know, we're all sort of gloomy Londoners. And I just always wanted to work with her, and I sort of messaged her this time around, and she really liked the first record. And she got back to me, which was cool. I mean, the other collaborations, things like Bonobo and Lil Silver, they just came about because they're good friends, and we were in the studio together, and it just sort of happened.
Well, you'd toured with Bonobo as well, hadn't you?
Yeah, I've done a few gigs with Simon. You know, he's definitely someone who I've sort of gained quite a lot of inspiration from over the last sort of 2-3 years. I think he remixed Full Circle off the last record, and kind of we realized that we had quite a lot of mutual friends and hung out quite a lot and made this track. And you know, he has a very interesting way of thinking about music that was quite different to the way I approached it. So you always learn from other people when you get in the studio with them, but from him I definitely learned quite a lot.
And George, despite those guests, it also seems to be your own songs on All That Must Be where you've really been able to stretch your wings the most. Siren Calls has that great sort of squelchy acid vibe about it, and the last song, Passing Trains, is almost your Eno Coda on the album. So is it kind of fun to not have to fit songs into other artists as well? Is, you know, it seems like a good balance.
Yeah, I mean, weirdly with this album, because the collaborators are a bit more high profile, people have quite naturally focused on that. But there are actually less collaborations on this record than the last one, and that was quite deliberate. I just kind of wanted there to be slightly less of that. I've always been quite sensitive to having too many. I think electronic albums by producers that are, where they have 10 collaborations on them are rubbish. You know, they're absolutely terrible.
And your accountants must hate that as well, you know, splitting up all the songwriting.
It's a pain in the arse, you know, like getting so many people involved. So I wanted to like spread my wings a little bit more with this one. And, you know, as you said, hopefully people can hear that.
Well, I hope you can do a bit of both. I hope you can get some big show somewhere with all these collaborators one night. You need to do your Vegas spectacular this year.
Well, you know, I'm hoping to... I don't think Tracy gigs very much, so I'm hoping to kind of coax her out to play a London show at some time. She doesn't know about that yet. But maybe I can twist Bonobo's arm into playing bass guitar or something at the live show. Who knows?
It needs to happen. Maybe your birthday or something.
Yeah, exactly. I'll guilt trip him pretty badly over it, and we'll see what happens.
We might have a listen to one of your own songs off this record. We'll play this almost deep trance epic called The Echo Forgets.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a killer. We'll see you back in Australia at some point, hopefully with more of a live show.
Yeah, the next time, I've been over DJing, and later this year I will be back with the live show 100%. So I'm really excited about that.
Looking forward to it. This is George Fitzgerald with The Echo Forgets on Static, and look after your jet lag.
Thank you very much.